axial crossing is based on this paper with this page number, and also the work in progress. So the majority of approaches that aim to realize inflation given string theory have aimed to construct new inflationary scenario in which the inflaton, whose role is played by one of the moduli, rolls on an underlying sufficiently flat potential. There are some disadvantages associated with this approach to realization of inflation. To achieve a sufficiently flat potential, there is usually a huge deal of fine-tuning. Also, to have the universe roll along this direction, all other moduli should be stabilized, or in other words, all other moduli should have the potential curved off. And usually when one wants to do that, to stabilize all the moduli, the rest of the moduli, one usually distorts the inflaton potential. For example, in KKLMT model, stabilization of the volume moduli causes the eta problem. The other approach to construct inflation within a string theory is based on assisted inflationary scenario, in which the cumulative behavior of too many moduli, whose individual potential is too steep, increases the Hubble friction and causes inflation. So the advantage this approach to realization of inflation has is that it alleviates the task of stabilization of the rest of moduli before inflation. So one should just make sure that the rest of the moduli potential are less steeper than the inflaton. If this is satisfied, then the inflaton, because the individual potential for each of the moduli is too steep, the universe will roll along those directions first. So the title, the outline of my talk is like this. So first I will review the setup of assisted inflation. Then I will say how Vickers and Axel Krause realize assisted inflation in heterotic M-theory. Then I will talk about cascading evolution in M-theory assisted inflation. And then I will talk about signatures for cascade inflation. And at the end, I will conclude my talk and give some future directions for research. Suppose we have M scalar fields with steep potentials, steep exponential potentials. One can show that there is an attractor solution in which there is an attractor solution in which all scalar fields can become equal, and at that time one can express the dynamics in terms of an effective field phi tilde, which is defined like this, and effective potential v bar, which looks like exponential, but with different power p tilde, which is n times of the previous p. So although p can be less than 1, if we have sufficient number of moduli, then p tilde will be greater than 1, and we can have accelerated expansion.
Does the g though have to be the same?
No, it doesn't have. So I just focus on the simplest case, but one can show that for different powers also the same conclusion is true. So p tilde will be then sigma pr. So to
call but the existence of an attractive solution must depend on the fact that they're not too different, right? If one of them is much, much smaller, then you have a very steep direction compared to all the others.
Probably it will take longer time to achieve this attractor solution, but there is an attractor. There is such an attractor solution. The starting point of M-theory inflation is heterotic M-theory in presence of N-parallel M-phi frames. And they're distributed along the orbifold, compacted 5 and collabial manifold, preserving N equals to 1 supersymmetry in 4D. And each of the M5 frames has wrapped the same 2-cycle on the collabial manifold on the above once and filled the 4-dimensional space-time. So setting to 0 all charged matter fields, the superpotential is the combination of open membrane instantons stretching between the boundaries and the open membrane instantons between the M5 frame. The M5 frames and the boundaries, and the Gugino condensation on the hidden boundary. But by stacking the M5 frames, away from the boundaries, and in the middle of the orbifold, one can neglect the contribution of W99, 59, and 95, which is the case. Interboundary and M5 brain and 5 brain interactions. And not M5 brain, M5 brain inter, in fact, M5 brain boundary. And also, Gugino condensation is important when we have an orbifold close to the critical length. So if we set this length of the orbifold much less than the critical length, we can ignore this contribution as well.
Sorry, I missed. Why can you ignore W99 and W? Why can you ignore all those 9s?
So I stacked all the 5 brains in the middle of the orbifold. So if we work in the regime where supergravity is applicable, then one can ignore because. Interboundary interactions depends exponentially on the length of the orbifold.
Okay, so the length just kills them all.
Yeah. Finally, the contribution to the superpotential comes from the M5-brain interactions. And then one can write down the 4-dimensional n equals 1 supergravity in terms of these moduli, s, t, and y, I, z, alpha, where s is the volume modulus of the collabial, t is the modulus associated to the length of the orbifold, y, I is the M5 brain position chiral superfield, and z, alpha is complex structure moduli. And these moduli are expressed in terms of some geometrical variables, where L is the length of the orbifold, V is the collabial volume average over the orbifold, V sub O M is the average volume of the open membrane stretched between 2 boundaries, and XI11 is the position moduli of the M5 frame, and sigma t, sigma s, and sigma I are axioms coming from 3 form of the 11-dimensional supergravity.
So that, what are fields and what are constants in those expressions? Is everything a field? Or regarded as a
so s, t, y, I, and z alpha are preliminarily fields. So
but what about V and V0M? I mean, they look to me like they should be constants.
They are constants.
They are constants.
Yeah.
So it's only sigma S and sigma T and sigma I that are fields.
Yeah. No. S, T, Y, I, Z, alpha.
Yeah, but if the sigmas are fields,
yeah.
Then the
yeah.
other
yeah.
is.
Sure.
And what about Z? Are
the
Zs?
Z is also the field, the moduli. So, as I mentioned, the superpotential is coming from the interactions of N5 grains. And H in this formula is the parameter which I will determine it later. So Kepler potential is the combination of Kepler potential of all these moduli. And one can prove that there exists such a relation between them. This is a work of Lucas over at Valdrum. And D in this formula is the Calabi-Yau intersection number. Omega is the Calabi-Yau Kepler form. And we have defined the real moduli in this formula. So small s is the real, twice of the real value of big S, and the same here for t, small t and small yi. Y is defined like this. And late, and q is also defined in this formula. One can show that it's equal to twice of the volume of the Calabi-Yau manifold, and so it's always positive. R is always positive too, R, this combination of a real value moduli. So this comes from the fact that one wants a positive Kepler metric. So the expression, the supergravity expression for F term potential looks like this. And D, big D, IW phi 5 is the Kepler derivative defined in this way. And e to the power of k is the Kepler factor. So to partially minimize the energy, one can impose these two conditions. Kepler derivative of W phi 5 with respect to the chiral superfields of N5 frames should be zero. Also, the Kepler derivative with respect to complex structure moduli. The first of these conditions will result in fixing H. The second one, in the large volume limit, which is the limit in which supergravity is valid, reduces to the partial derivative on W55. And one can show that if one focuses on nearest neighbor interactions, this condition is equivalent with saying that the distance between each M5 grain with a neighbor one is the same. So we are dealing with a equidistant distribution. This comes from imposing this constraint. So if we define delta y, small delta y, as the real part of the separation of chiral superfields, ultimately the potential will look like this. To map the potential to the assisted inflationary potential, the factor of this, the prefactor of the exponential should be y independent, and that means that we have to impose this constraint. So as we will see, this constraint will deliver an upper bound on the number of M5 frames that can exist in the bulk of the orbital. Ultimately, imposing all these constraints, the potential will look like this, an exponential potential times the prefactor, which is defined in terms of geometrical variables of the problem. So the kinetic term for these chiral superfields are not canonically normalized. So there's a factor of Kij and j, because Kij is the Kepler metric. So, which has this expression. One can show that in the limit of validity of supergravity, this expression reduces to this one. And it's yi independent, yeah. And then one can define the scale variable phi I position by position field of n phi frames, proportional position of n phi frames, and the separations of n phi frames from each other. Doing the canonical transformation, one can go from position separation of n phi frames and the separation of n phi frames to center of mass field, center of mass coordinate, and also the separation. And then ultimately, the kinetic term will look like this. Again, doing another rescaling, one can define R in flaton, which is denoted by script phi here, and it has some independence in it.
So T now is
regular? T is the length of the moduli and length of the orbital, and it's there are two factors that are important in dynamics of that. One is open, one is the inter-boundary interactions of n phi frames. The other one is gauge Dino condensation. We have fixed gauge Dino condensation. We have ignored gauge Dino condensation, but within the length of the orbital less than the critical length. And interboundary is exponentially small. And they will remain small till the end of the inflation. So
but
T is almost fixed.
Well, assuming it's independent of time, but is it? Does it have a mass from the point of view of the order here? The derivations, when you change variables, if t is a function of space time, then you'll get.
No, t is the length of the orbital, so it's not dependent on the inflaton fields, boy.
No, I agree, but so I guess my point is just that if little t is not stabilized, then it can fluctuate. And if it fluctuates, then when I do the transformation you did there, there will be terms that will be d phi, d t, you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so evolution of phi will induce evolution of t and so forth. But if you assume it's massive, then
I guess that's the case. The mass will be associated to the fluctuation, it will be too large. So the fluctuations are basically dense.
So it's large T that allows that approximation to be valid?
Yes.
So that means that Y can't get very big. Phi in this case.
In comparison with QT.
Okay, in comparison with QT, sure.
And so as I mentioned, that will deliver a bound on the number of n phi frames.
Okay, all right, that's that.
So ultimately, the potential will look like this, the exponential potential, which can produce power law inflation. And the prefactor is like that. It's that determines the scale of inflation, and that, as I mentioned, should be less than the Gauss scale. And P is dependent on the approximately on the cube of the number of n phi frames. So because epsilon and eta, the first and second slow roll parameters, are dependent on 1 over P, if you have sufficiently large number of n phi frames, one can satisfy slow roll condition, and there will be no eta problem in this scenario. So during inflation, because of the M2 instanton interactions between the n phi frames, their separation will grow gradually with time. So this continues until the n phi frame reach the separation of M5 frame. This continues until the two observables M5 frame reach the boundaries. At that time, they hit the boundaries and they are dissolved to the boundaries by a small instanton transitions. And then the number of N5 grains in the ball were reduced to N minus 2, assuming that we have started from the symmetric case in which all the N5 grains are just in the middle of the orbital.
So this is where I get confused in this. I mean, the approximations before needed the Ys to be small compared to the QTs, which are essentially the length. And the Ys are basically the positions of these grains, right? But if you let two of them go out to the boundaries, you've lost that approximation.
No, there are some factors inside it. So that's why I'm saying that. Because once you put more N5 grains, you increase the volume of the orbifold, the volume modulus of the orbifold. If you remember, the volume moduli I defined for the orbifold has some contributions from the existence of N5 grains in the ball. So more N5 grains you put, the more you will increase the volume of the colloidal,
and that has the effect of keeping those things small.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the instanton transitions can change the topological data on the boundaries, either with chirality changing or gauge group changing. And we are focusing here on the chirality changing because we don't want that we produce too much unwanted relics. And during each step, as I mentioned, if we start from the symmetric case, we will lose two of the N5 grains. So ultimately, after N transition, we will have N minus 2N. And ultimately, the exit from inflation happens when P, the power, drops below 1. So one thing that I want to stress here is that delta X is proportional to delta Y. Delta X is always increasing. So delta Y is also increasing because L and volume of the open membrane are almost constant. If we go back to the previous slide, you will see that delta Y is approximately proportional to delta Phi, and script Phi, our inflaton, is proportional to delta Phi. So delta Phi is always increasing, but N jumps jumps backward sometimes. So N decreases. So if we want to from the four-dimensional effective theory, if you want to graph the function of a potential the potential as a function of script phi or inflaton, it's not going to be single value. So if you at some transition points, delta phi is increasing, but n is decreasing, so we will jump to lower values of phi. So that will be a challenge. I want to stress here that for those who want to find the potential of the inflaton by the data, that will be a challenge because they have always assumed that it's a single value function. So at the end, we have a cascade of power law inflation. And at transition times, we can. So this lambda, I guess, should be ellipsis symbol. Sorry about that. It seems that it's not the version of PowerPoint that I prepared. This is definitely the one in this computer. So we can tailor the scalar factor at the transition times and determine the prefactors of the scale factor here. Also, by inverting the power law inflation solution for the inflaton as a function of time is a problem. There should be a T here. And noting that delta X at the beginning of inflation, the separation of N5 grain with respect to the length of the orbifold is much less than 1, one can determine the initial time. when the inflation starts and also the transition times. So WMAP 3-year results indicate that NS should be in this range at 60 or 50 years of things before the end of inflation. Since we are dealing with power loss scenarios, NS, the scalar spectral index, is given by this expression. So adopting typical values of V and V sub O N from this paper by Bakers and Krause, they have basically fixed the moduli to obtain interesting particle phenomenology. And that's where these numbers come from. Then one can put a constraint on n number of F5 grain in the ball. And these values of F5 grain satisfy this condition, Qt much bigger than y squared, which delivers this bomb. So once to satisfy the observational constraint, n should lie within this interval. And this one comes from the fact that you want to have a valid supergravity. If we take the central value of NS equals to 0.95, then number of F5 grains that we need is about 66. So in order to have the gravity waves under control, the scale of inflation should be less than the Gauss scale. This comes from the fact that we do not want to distort the cosmic microwave background radiation beyond its order of, beyond its limits of anisotropy. And with the mentioned values for the Calabi-Yau parameters, that will induce a relation that will determine the number, the intersection number of the Calabi-Yau manifold. And I should, however, stress that these values for the Calabi-Yau parameters are not the only values that will lead to Gauss scale inflation. These are just order of magnitude estimation. And there are a set of different parameters for the Calabi-Yau manifold that can lead to Gauss scale inflation. As we will see, different values of these parameters will determine the position of resulted signatures on the cosmic microwave background radiation. However, we try to be faithful to the first data set that we mentioned in the beginning. And doing so, one can determine the beginning of inflation and number of F5 grains that are required. So initial time is about 10 to the power of 5 Planck time, and number of equal things is about 238, which is much bigger than what we require to solve the flatness horizon problem of standard Big Bang cosmology. Here, I've assumed that instant reheating, so reheating temperature is also about that scale. The evolution of scalar field, scalar perturbations are given by this expression. Use the gauge invariant scalar potential perturbation. And the parameter Z is A phi dot over H. H is the Hubble parameter. And U is proportional to the curvature perturbation of the comoving hypersurface. We impose that once the mode is inside the horizon, the mode approaches the Bunch Davis vacuum. Also, the solution should satisfy the Bunch Davis, the Wronskian condition. Ultimately, the power spectrum for scalar perturbation is defined like that. And that's defined in the limit where modes are built outside the horizon. So we parameterize the scale factor in terms of conformal time, tau. And here are newcomer variables. And ultimately, the mode equation will reduce to the Bessel equation, whose solution is a combination of Hankel functions. And if we want to that this solution reduce to the Bunch Davis vacuum, one can determine the Bogoliubov coefficients in the first phase. So the first Bogoliubov coefficient is zero, then the second one is zero, the first one is non-zero, if it's value. Through the transitions from one power log phase to the next one, potential is discontinuous. That means that the scale factor is continuous, but the Hubble parameter is not. Potential is a step occurs in supergravity-motivated models of inflation, where inflaton lies in the hidden sector of the theory, and it's coupled to the standard model fields. And the phase transition in the visible sector can change the mass of the inflaton. And therefore, since the mass of the inflaton changes, a step will occur in the potential. But here there is a difference from this case, supergravity motivated models of inflation and the model we have. In this model, once inflaton is rolling, once potential drops at transition time, the difference of the steps is transferred to the boundaries. It's not going to change the kinetic energy of the inflaton. So that's why we can approximate the model, the background by power law before and after transition. Since Hubble parameter decreases, the Hubble length will increase, and that means that some modes that have just gone outside the horizon are recaptured by the horizon and start oscillating again. These oscillations are transferred to the oscillations in the power spectrum, as you will see. To be able to tailor the mode function at transition time, one should use the continuity of the curvature perturbations of the comoving hypersurface R, and that gives us this opportunity to determine the ith Bogoliubov coefficient in terms of the I minus 1. Ultimately, the power spectrum will look like this. As you see, there are some downswings in the power spectrum at some locations. And at very small scale, we will have a very red power spectrum. Focusing on the transition, so I don't know why it doesn't change that show it. So if you focus on the transition times, you will see the fluctuations in the power spectrum. So it doesn't show it. Sorry about that.
Can you draw it on the board?
Yeah. So with the previous choices of the parameters for the Calabi-Yau manifold, we will have in the first phase it will have 7% drop in the potential of the inflaton, and then the as we can see that the oscillation lasts for 3 decades in K. So the scalar spectral index will look like this, as you see. Because the power in exponent in the scale factor changes, the scalar spectral index also changes, and it drops in each step, except for these oscillations. And focusing on oscillations, we can see that the frequency of oscillations gets smaller. No, increases, sorry. Yeah. Tensor perturbations satisfy similar equation. And these are well known, so I won't go through them again. And I focus on the first 5 bounds of inflation. The power spectrum will look like this. And this is the, except for this line, which I don't like even. These are tensor perturbation, and these are tensor spectral index. And the tensor spectral index is always red, except at transition times, it goes beyond zero, above zero. So you'll have blue power spectrum at some very finite interval of scales. So because the background values of the background values changes, number of particles produced is also because the background changes, the second Bogoliubov coefficient is non-zero. And if you calculate it at the end of inflation, we will see that it's decreasing as k increases. So we'll have something like this. So this is. But if we focus on the energy per unit of momentum, then which is defined in this form, one can see that if this is increasing, and that means that the clumpier the fluctuation is, more energy is contained in the particles that are produced, and that gives. That lets us speculate that perhaps the particles that are produced during inflation can contribute to solving the dark matter problem. So the energy in the small wavelength fluctuation is increasing. So smaller wavelength you have, you will have more energy needs.
Sorry, why the dark matter?
Sorry?
I didn't get that. Why are you saying specifically the dark matter?
Because, if this is the energy inside the. This is the energy in a small k, okay?
Right.
It's a small interval of k, and it's increasing. So. These are particles that are produced at the end of inflation. We don't have any inflation to dilute them away. And the more, the smaller the fluctuations are, okay, the smaller the fluctuations are, the bigger the energy is. So these can contribute to the energy distribution of the universe.
But depends on those particles are.
These are small wavelength perturbations. Can be treated like particles.
No, I agree. I'm just saying that this kind of reheating thing would surely occur in infrared.
This is not reheating. I'm not talking about this.
Well, it's part of the perturbation. It's the same process.
I don't know why it's dark matter or not.
Yeah, that's basically why doesn't. I mean, the same mechanism works for.
Mm-hmm.
I think what he says is after reheating, there could be a just electricity radiation. What is the field you are associating with the dark matter?
These
are just the inflaton fluctuations?
Inflaton.
So after the reheating, they can just become a fluctuation in the thermal line. I mean, you should associate some field, I mean, to say that these are real dark matter.
Uh-huh.
I think that's what Andrew also meant.
Yeah, that's
right. Okay. I just speculated. I don't want to stress upon it.
It is something stupid. So when you were showing your observations in the power spectrum, there seemed to be, every time I see a wiggle like this, I should associate this with two of these guys hitting the boundary. And it seemed that over the relevant range of modes, it's one of these five of these events.
I focus on the first 5 bounds. So we can see these transitions, we can distinguish these transitions if each power law phase lasts long enough to let the oscillations fade away. Otherwise, at the last inflationary bounce, the power spectrum is just decreasing. You can see the oscillations.
Right. Are you saying?
So this is just for the first 5 bucks.
Okay.
If I let it go, okay, then I will have a very red spectrum at that small scale.
But still, so how many grains are there in total? Let's say first at e-fold minus 55.
This is not e-fold, this is logarithm of k, okay.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Okay, so how many and 5 grains are there?
So I have started with 66 and 5 grains. And in each step, we lose 2 and 5 grains. The first, this...
But your potential energy went like n squared. So
potential is more proportional to n cubed.
So how can that change in 2 over 66 and n?
This is in logarithm of...
Yeah, it just seems to be a big change in amplitude for what seems to me in changes in energy density to be a fairly small change.
This change is not that much. It's 10 to the power of minus 8.8 to 10 to the power of minus 9 approximately. Or 10 to the power of minus 8.6 to 10 to the power of minus 8.8. This is that not much. So in the first, the decreasing the amplitude of potential is about 7% in the first step. Okay. What's the problem?
Maybe I'm being stupid, so I'm thinking if I have 66 of these guys, 2 of them disappeared by getting the boundary.
Mm-hmm.
Potential energy went from 66 to the cube to 64 to the cube.
Also, the power of the exponential changes as well. I've checked that, and it's about 7% drop in the amplitude of potential. So, people have used scale invariant power spectrum as an input to n-body simulations of structure formation, and they have noticed that they have overpredicted the number of dwarf galaxies in the number of dwarf galaxies by an order of magnitude. And Lidl and Kamienkowski have suggested that a sudden downswing in the power spectrum at the small scales can explain this discrepancy. In cascade inflation, we have a natural mechanism to suppress the amplitude of perturbations at the small scales, but basically because the Hubble parameter and also the slope of the potential, the Hubble parameter increases and the slope of the potential increases, then we will have smaller amplitude for density perturbations at smaller scales. And one should also stress that using the previous values for the geometrical parameters of the problem, the first operation occurs at about 1/100th of megaparsec, which is not in clash with Lyman Alpha Forest measurements.
I don't understand this. In your case, you say that the first suppression
occurs
power compared to a scale invariant spectrum is at that scale.
Yeah.
But it's a percent change in your case, right?
Yeah, but
whereas the big problem you need is a huge cutoff in power.
Actually, they have Bullock and Zentner. They have shown that this is not necessary to be the case. After they analyze it in closely, and they showed that runnings of a few percent can solve the problem. So let me conclude my talk. So cascade inflation predicts stepwise decrease in the scalar spectral index. So if we happen to measure the data of two adjacent phases, then we might interpret it as negative running of spectral index in the spectral index. And I should recall you that WMAP 3-year data indicates that favors a slight negative running in the proper spectrum.
Did you just say that the first step occurred of 0.012 millimeters, and that's a smaller scale than the line on the board?
Yeah.
This wouldn't show up in WMAP 3 scale at all.
See, as I mentioned, the parameters that I input to the problem are just order of magnitude estimation. So by changing them, relocate them. Okay.
Right, but I mean.
I agree with you. With this choice of parameters, we cannot explain negative running, but.
Would it cost? I mean, depending on a bunch of steps in the power spectrum, it seems like you have to tune a lot to make just spread enough for a bunch of steps. Or is that? I mean, so you have if having a bunch of little steps in the power function going to mess things up for the agreement today.
I don't know, because the resolution is not going to be that much, because if you happen to have two bus of power law inflations and beside each other, and you happen to have to extract data from one and from the other one, if you put them together and want to extract information from the scalar spectral index, you will interpret it as negative running.
Right.
You won't see the step unless you want to. You put it as your priors into the problem. Because, as I mentioned, because Hubble parameter decreases step by step, the slope changes increases actually, the amplitude of Hubble spectrum at smaller scales is much smaller than simple extrapolation of Hubble spectrum at larger scale indicates, and that can mitigate the problem of over-prediction of dwarf galaxies using a scale invariant spectrum. The other thing is this recent paper by Kobe Melchiori group, which have tried to find the deviations of WMAP 3 from feature-less power spectrum, and they have tried to focus. They have tried to find the locations of oscillation features in the power spectrum. And it will be interesting if one can implement the same idea for cascade inflation. Perhaps one can extract M theory parameters from data if accuracy permits. So I should also stress that in supramotivated models of inflation, existence of jump depends on whether phase transition occurs in the standard model field, and it's not a prior. But in cascade inflation, these features are generated inevitably. So if cascade inflation is correct, then one can see the features in the power spectrum. And because in contrast to assisted inflation, some of the fields that are accomplished in generating the inflation are leaving the scene as the M5 grain dissolve into the boundaries. So Vans and Malik and Siri and Lissi, they have showed that for assisted inflation, one can do a phase, one can reparametrize the field such that a distinguished field is responsible for adiabatic perturbations, and the rest of fields around it are negligible, and they are responsible for isoquadrature perturbations. But in this case, as I said, some of the fields leave the scene gradually, one by one, two by two actually in this case. And this can create probably non-Gaussianity. Also, if you remember Maldacena formula for non-Gaussianity, three-point function is proportional to the deviation of the power spectrum from a scale invariance times the amplitude of the power spectrum. So the more scale non-invariant the potential becomes, the non-Gaussianity will increase. Since in this model, at later bounds, we will have non-scale invariant spectrum, then probably one can bring the non-Gaussianity generated in this model to the limit of observability.
It isn't going to be, rather than that, it's the sudden change in the Hubble parameter as you go with the matrix. That's going to be, and so that would create the most non-Gaussianity.
So for single scalar field, if the slope of the potential wouldn't change from one step to the other, okay,
yeah.
The scalar spectral index wouldn't change and it would remain close to scale invariant power spectrum. Also, the amplitude would drop because Hubble parameter is decreasing, and actually we would lower the non-Gaussian. We will lower the magnitude of non-Gaussianity. Okay, because both the amplitude of power spectrum and deviation from scale invariant power spectrum. No, deviation remains the same, amplitude drops. Okay?
Yeah, but you're assuming it's just the deviation.
This is a work in progress, I'm just guessing.
Will the scale of non-Gaussianity be linked to the scale at which the changes in the power, the steps in the power spectrum take place?
Sorry?
The scale at which non-Gaussianity appears, thanks to those fields, will that be linked to the scale at which you cause the steps in the power function?
Mm-hmm.
So, right. But non-Gaussianity would have to be a very small scale, presumably not already to be ruled out by observations.
As I mentioned, these transitions occur at a small scale.
Right, but you said, just told me.
You can see. I'm saying that if you want to interpret negative Ronning, the answer to your question, if I want to interpret as negative Ronning, one can choose another set of data. Okay, you have this freedom from M theory. The parameters are not fixed. Okay, here I want to say that you can push. Shovel all the non-Gaussianities to small scale so that you satisfy the bounds from non-Gaussianity at large scale. So you have this freedom depending on your. That's why I'm saying that you can extract information about M theory analyzing the data.
But why should I think, if I see any of those things, why should I think it's M theory?
Basically, you have this freedom. It depends on your taste, certainly. So if you want, you can determine it as something else. But at some point, you should, if you want to be faced to identify everything within a fundamental theory, then one should use either one of these string theories, loop quantum gravity, whatever.
Is there any, I mean, the brains leave 2x2, but why not 4x4, 6x6? Is there any reason why they have to go other than simplicity? I mean, couldn't you have 2 this way, 2 that way, so you get 4?
So gradually, the distance between M5 brains increases simultaneously. So each separation, it's not going to...
the whole group is separated at once.
Yeah. But if you locate
it... Isn't that in itself a simplifying assumption? Why do they have to separate all at once?
Because it comes from the fact that energy's minimization of energy, potential energy, puts this constraint that separation should be, we should have an equidistant separation.
Okay.
this comes from the partial minimization of finish.
My guess is there's probably another knob in the theory that could adjust that effect in some way.
See, if you put the stack of M5 brains not right in the middle, so M5 brains will dissolve into the boundary one by one.
Yeah. And that should produce analogous effects.
And analogous effects, analogous qualitative effects, but not quantitative.
Yeah. But that gets back to the other. It's not only whether or not it's M theory, it's what particular conditions on the particular M theory it is that are being probed, because the brains in the middle is simplifying. I understand what you say about the minimization conditions, but it would still seem to me it should be possible to make a model where you've got, they separate at different rates, basically. So you can shift them over, they separate at different rates, so.
They won't separate at different rates.
So that's absolutely not permitted by the model in any way.
If,
I find that a little hard to believe.
Because the contribution of contribution coming from boundary and five frames are negligible till the end of inflation. Even if you start from asymmetrical configuration, you will end up with the same thing. So ultimately, the interactions of M5 frames are just important, not the interactions of M5 frames with the boundary.
But still, the generic thing should be that instead of a pairwise crashing into the boundary, they should hit one by one.
Yeah, one by one is possible.
That
so
would
there's
not only possible, it would suggest that it's normative. Because why should the brains be symmetrically located in the middle to start with?
But it should be somewhere around, because otherwise.
That's the initial condition, like this problem that you mentioned.
Yeah, it's an initial condition.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
All
it's like any inflation.
So I'm just saying, within the context of this model, I would expect.
I agree, the model is tuned, but it's not finely tuned. If you put the stack somewhere in the middle of the system.
But you see, I'm saying this is from your viewpoint, I would think this could be a good thing because you've got more calculations to do, right? That you could see, are there significant or possibly interesting differences from the one-by-one model relative to the two-by-two model? Because
mm-hmm.
I would expect the one-by-one model is the more generic case because there's a lot more scenarios that can give it relative to the two-by-two.
Mm-hmm. I see.
So, that might be worth, there'll presumably be some kind of cascading, but things will be lopsided in some way, and that presumably will have a thumbprint in the power spectrum.
Yeah.
So, that might be worth checking out. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
In this setup, within what range of inflationary escape you can accommodate inflation, is it necessary that it should be very close to M-God, or you can accommodate
With the choice of parameters I mentioned that come from the earlier papers of Bakers and Krause, if we want to lower the scale of inflation, the number of intersections of the Calabi-Yau manifold will be driven to a range which is not peculiar to the Calabi-Yau manifold. So people have not observed such Calabi-Yau manifolds in the string theory or in mathematics.
So
if you change your parameters, then you can lower the scale.
By how much? Like just ballpark?
No.
Can you have maybe 10 to the 10? To the
yeah, I guess three or four orders of magnitude is a lot.
Can I come back to the issue of stabilization? Because I guess I'm so in the level of a so the T modulus, right? You sort of ignored what it was doing, but I think it's got to be firmly stabilized. And I wasn't sure from your calculation whether you just took potential for something to stabilize it. Because the point is that if you think of it as a fully effective theory, then your M5, the interaction of the M5 brains are some vacuum energy for, if I reach some vacuum energy, and then that, say, if I go to Einstein frame, that will induce a potential for the T modulus as well, and that will make it evolve.
See, you have different contributions to your potential. One is coming from only M5 brains themselves, and then M5 brains with the boundaries and boundary.
Yes.
Okay. Now you can have an order of magnitude estimate for the interboundary
I'm not asking whether their interaction.
So if you fix it, if you fix it, if you fix it.
If you look at your Fourier effective theory, does the T modulus have a mass? Yes or no?
Because the potential is exponentially decreasing, so you will have a very small force acting on it.
So that means it has no mass.
It has no mass.
Yeah. So then, in other words, if I look at your, if it has little mass, which is what I thought, then in the Fourier effective theory, the precise vacuum energy you're calculating will, if I gas everything in action, that will turn itself into a potential for both y and t. So there will be a direction for t as well that can evolve, and for s as well.
In this calculation, I have assigned some numbers to t. Okay, so and that comes from the fact that we want to have an interesting phenomenology. Okay, we want to probably these values in the right derivation of these values, they have assumed that t can also be stabilized. In between, I have not reviewed that paper, so I have not looked into that paper. I have to, but yeah. But I mean, it's possible that they have stabilized it somehow.
I mean,
to guess.
Yes, it's not a criticism. It's just a comment that he started by saying in other models of string inflation it was important that can sometimes stabilizing moduli can destroy what looked to be flat directions and. It's just a comment. This is something I would worry about. Because if these guys, if your other moduli can evolve, then.
Okay, I will check that. Thank you.